Kit Brady, we're here again, and yeah. I'm talking to you about how about life gone by, yeah. And a time, I suppose, that was so different just a half a century ago, yeah. And you lived through all of that.
Yeah.
And just, you know, the town of Saggart here, it wasn't a town, really.
No,
it was
village.
A village.
Oh, village, yeah, and a very small village as well, you know.
And who were the people living here?
Well, nearly everybody here were related to one another, you know. But like those houses across the road there's 22 of those. They were built in 1939. Well, they were the start of them. And all the people that used to live in the little houses up in the village got those houses then, you know. See, there's the village, the old village.
Oh, yes.
You see?
And what were the names?
See, these little
what were
houses?
The family
well,
names?
Well, Mars lived here, Mullally's, Burnett's, and a woman by the name of Mrs. Ritchie lived there. Now, do you see where the tree is there?
Which
see
is
this wall here?
The two houses,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thatched house, burnt down. That's where we lived before we got this house. My father lived there. And then there was the pub, Mrs. Murphy's pub. And then
there's
a little house there. Yeah,
in now, the top of the village.
But between that and the pub, there was a whole row of little houses attached to them. You know, came up towards that. They were all knocked at this time. And but when I was a kid, like all Flynn's, Burns, McCrave's, they all got these houses here.
Yeah.
All the people that lived along there, and they're all dead now, all the old people that owned those houses. And the pump, the village pump, see it there? That was the water supply for Saggart.
Was it?
That was the water. In the summertime, we'd all be carrying water for the gardens, you know, for plants and that. And you'd be carrying, and it'd go dry. You'd have to wait till it would build up, or you'd have to go up to the river, the mill race, you know, at the mill, and get the water out of the river. But that was a bit further to be going, you know. And then there was down at the church here, at this house, just there, there's a spout, a little river comes down there. It was always called Bear's Spout. That was what it was called. They have a little wall around it now and all. And there was always water, because there was a little stream coming down through the fields, you know, and came out there and into a shore. And you could drink it and all, like, it was good
and
water.
And did you draw
you know?
Water from there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And up at Murray's on the school road now, on your way home to Talla, there was a lovely a little well, and it's all covered in now. And it was only a little hole in the ground, and it was always full of real cold water, you know. It was beautiful water.
And did it have a name?
No, it hadn't a name. No, just you'd maybe call it Murray's Well, because it was beside Murray's, you know. That was it. But it wasn't. It was only a little hole in at the butt of a bank, you know, in off the road. And it's all covered up now, but there was beautiful water come up. It was a spring, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know where the water supply for this used to come from, because there was no water.
For the village water
pump,
yeah.
Like it was coming out of the ground somewhere. Up behind the houses, because like there was no water supply here. That all came in the 50s. The water supply and the sewerage, you know, came here.
Yeah.
There was no sewerage like or anything here then.
But there was no telegraph poles.
Oh no. Sure, like I was about 13, I'd say, when the ESB came around here. It was all eye lamps. One of our lamps is still there. It was a wedding present, seemingly, for my mother and father. So I still have it. We had another one that stood on the table, and I gave it to a niece of mine, and I think she got a bulb, an electric bulb put in it, that, you know. But that's...
What about the different way of life, you know, the customs? Was there pattern day?
Well, you see, up beside the school was the Fair Green. There's houses built in it now. And that was where fairs and all were held in the old days. Do you know, like, I don't remember much about fairs in it. But when an old travelling shore aunt had come, they'd be in there too, you know. There was one half that was nice and solid ground. The rest was all bog. We'd be out of school at dinner time, you know, playing. You'd be going in, you'd be up to your knees in muck and all, you know. But, you know, it was great. It was a great, easy life. Like, the back door, like, we had no back kitchen around. Those houses had nothing, none of this. Like, we built this ourselves. There was a window there. one window, and there was another one up here into the room, into that room.
There was only three rooms in the house.
Three rooms and that one there, you know, four rooms altogether. But that at that time, that was the kitchen. You know, everything was done in there.
In there
was a concrete floor.
Yeah.
You know, it's concrete floor still there under the carpet.
Mm.
But and the back door would never be, when we did get a back door, would be never locked. Never.
And the, you know, the traffic today is mad, but was it always?
It was always quite sure. You'd have, the kids would be all out and they'd have beds, we call them beds, you know, chalk marks with squares and all the numbers for playing games, you know, mm-hmm. out on the...
Now, Betty, Cavanagh is your maiden name as well.
Maiden, yes.
And Kit was telling me all about you. Meeting and it wasn't the local dance hall, it was other circumstances. But since you came here in the 1950s, you've seen a lot of changes.
Well, 1948, that's when I left home, as I say, in Saggart with an aunt. She lived on the log up on the hill here, and my uncle worked in the mill at the time. So I really only came for a holiday, and my uncle asked my mother. My mother came up to collect me, to bring me back home, and the younger sister went home. My uncle asked her, would she leave me with him? They had one child, which had died like about 2 years previously. And I was very fond. My uncle was a lovely man. And
what age were you?
I was 14, 14 and a half, and would leave me. So that's how I came around here. I was finished in school.
Tell me about your aunt. Where was she living again?
She lived up in the Log Hill.
What was it called? Log Hill?
Log. The Log Saggart. That's what it is called. L-U-G-G.
What does that mean?
I don't know, it's just a name as far as I know.
Yeah.
It
still goes by that, people by Kelly's, like on the hill, had the hill, and it always went by Kelly's of the Log, didn't it?
Right, yeah.
And it was a rented house they had on it. Now, they didn't own it. Since that, now, the lady that owns the chemist here lives up there. She's years there. They built a house on that site they bought it, like, you know. But I lived there for about 2 years, and then she moved over to Rathcoole to live.
Yeah. And what was your aunt doing? Or was she just...
She just didn't...
Look after the small farm.
No, it wasn't a farm. My uncle worked in the mill, you see. They actually lived in Dublin, and my uncle used to cycle out to work in the mill. And this house, I suppose, came available at the time, and he moved out. He worked shift work in the mill. And that's the reason, like, that they moved out. They lived in those artisans' houses in Mead Square at the time. You know, off
I Thomas do Street. Indeed, yeah. And what was your uncle's name?
Jack Brett. Yeah, B-R-E-T-T, that was his name.
And the it was just after the war years, and how were things fairly tight at the time? Or?
Well, he cycled, like, I mean, he just had, when you know, cycled from Mead Square out, so yeah. They weren't well off. And they just, you know, lived their life, and then he moved over to Rathcoole, and it is a council house that they had built up in Cruikshane at the time on the Kilteel Road. And that's where he lived until he retired from the mill.
And really, all the people locally, as you were saying, they all worked in the mill.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Either that or on the farm, you know, farms around. I worked on the farm, and then I worked on the forestry, and I worked cutting timber over in Johnstown Wood during the war. Like, it was about 15 at the time, you know. We used to cut a man by the name of MacDonald set up a little business firewood, you know, blocks. You had a saw set up in Rathcoole, and a retired carpenter out of the mill used to run the saw. And we used to cut the timber up in Johnstown Wood. And it was all done that time. There was no chainsaws or anything. You know, it was cross cuts and hand saws, axes, and a sledge and chisels.
So you were tired after the end of the day.
The timber was cut into about 4 foot lengths, you know. And then it had to be split so as that we could carry it. You had to carry it out of the wood, out to the side of the road where the lorry could pick it up, you know. And the splitter with the wedges and the sledges, you see. And bits that two lads had pulled up on your back and off you went. You couldn't let it down, because if you let it down, you wouldn't be able to pick it up again. You know, it'd be too heavy for you. But you'd be able to change from one shoulder to the other or that, you know.
Yeah.
But that didn't last too long. That was only for a while. I went on the forestry then. I was there until I went into the mill. It was only, you know, of the spring I was up there. Used to be up on the Seacon Mountain fence. So I used to love it up there, you know, and the sun was great, you know.
It's
the National Forestry, you know.
Yeah. It was the National Forestry.
Yeah.
And who was your foreman again?
A man by the name of Mick Kelly. And when we went up look for a job, it was a nursery, a little nursery up there, up the Castle Road near Britis. And it was a lovely little field, you know. And our first job there was, you were issued with a little spade and a fork. And you were out in the nursery, and there was a line up the field. There was about 10 of us there working, you know, all young lads. And you went along the line, you dug up around 8 inches, right, to make a little bed. And then you had your plants, the trees. The first lot we had were about, you know, 8 inches long. And you went along and you saw them. When you stuck the plant against the thing there with a handful of clay, then you got your fork and you dug up the next row.
What variety of tree was going?
Oh, there were four, you know.
They all the same?
We had a Japanese larch or something like that came, and they were only that size.
About 2 inches.
Such a job trying to get to stick them into the clay to be sticking to your hand. One lad there, he's a big tall fella, people would be laughing at me taking the tree from under my fingernail, you know, that's joking, you know. But it was great, like, it was a great there. And then we spent a bit of time, we saw smoke up on the hill one day, and we all got on our bikes and up with the forester up there. And it was Bagnell's Hill up there in the Ballinascarney. It wasn't a part of the forest, but we had to put it out. It was all the heather was burning. There was no trees or anything. And we were up over Dr. O'Reilly's, you know.
Yeah.
And when we were finished there, anyhow, we were all brought down to the pub down at Britis, Dillon's pub it was then, you know, and the forester, like, bought us all a drink. I didn't drink at the time. It was shandy, you know, a big drink or something like that for the thirst, you know. Because it was a scorcher of a day. But it was just the heather was just burning, you know.
Oh, was all that seasonal work?
Oh, no. Well, yeah, they wouldn't keep that big staff on then for the winter months, you know. That was sown these little trees in the nursery. And, like, there was a line up, and there was a lad on each end of the line when everybody had their section. Everybody had a section to do, like, and when everybody had their bit done, the line was moved on, you know, for the next row.
And so that continued, your boss, I know you told me the foreman's name. What was
Kelly.
It? Kelly was the boss.
Kelly, yeah, he was the foreman. He was in charge of the lads working. But his boss was the forester, who lived over in Crook's Ling with a family of name of Bro. He lodged with them, you know.
Yeah.
He was a Cork man. Sullivan was the second lad. The first fellow wasn't Sullivan. When the fellow that took me on, going along, Kelly took us on, but the forester came over then during the day, you know, and he's asking us our names, and he said to me, what's your name? I said, Kit Brady. And he says, are you the Swallow Brady from Saggart? That was, yes, sir, and his brother was Paddy, he was called Swallow. And he says,
An older brother
yeah. I had, you know.
Were you there then for many years doing
no,
that?
No, I was only there for months. Then I went into the mill, yeah.
And did you see those trees growing?
No, I didn't see them growing. No, they were they were still in beds when I left it, you know.
And what year was it when they went down?
Oh, God, well, 47.
1947. Yeah. But did you ever go back to see them?
No. And it's not a nursery now, like there's a house built on it.
But wouldn't it be lovely to see them now?
Oh, yeah, if you knew where, but sure, they could be up in Wicklow or anywhere when they grew, you know, when they'd be sowed somewhere else, you know. Do you know, they're only in beds there.
They were transplanted, we were just putting them
because
in because it was only just a nursery
and then they'd be all sent off to different areas to be sown, you know. Yeah.
But you never saw where they went.
No And when I was there, the forester sent for me one morning, and I thought maybe I was after doing something, but he says, "Kit, I have a favor to ask you." Now he says, "You can refuse me now if you like, it won't make any difference," he said. But there's a family in Britis, a farmer, and they need, you see, the previous year was a bad snow and all. In fact, you could see the snow still up on Kilbride, up over the hills. And he says, "They're behind with the spuds and everything." And he says, "You're not long off a farm." He said, "Would you consider going and working for a few weeks with them?" Well, I said, "I don't mind going, but," I said, "I won't have the conditions there that I have." "Oh," he said, "you'll have the very same conditions, Kit. Same money, same pay," which was £3.50. That was man's wages. He gave me a man's wages because I was tall. He asked me my age. I said I was 19 and a half. He says, "What would you tell an inspector if he got in there?" Well, I said, "I'd have to tell him the same as you, I'm telling you." Well, he says, "If anybody comes in here," he says, "tell them you're over 21. He says, "The wages are small enough," he says, "and you're big enough there, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And But I went anyhow, and the first day I went up to Dowes, it was right at the back of the Blue Gardenia, the farm right behind the Blue Gardenia. And there was only one man there, you know, the son. All the rest were girls, the rest of the family. And I brought me lunch, of course, and when 10 o'clock came, one of the young ones came out for me to go in. And sure, there was a big fry waiting for me when I went in. Mrs. Dowd was a real stout, lovely woman, you know, and a big feed. She says, "You needn't be bringing lunch here, Kit. I'll feed you. And a dinner and tea." And one night the lads weren't going in. They were working on something in the shed. And I went home. I wouldn't go. I was too shy to go in. All I went on my own, you see. And I went home, and I went in the next morning. She ate the stuff and out of me the month. You know, Mrs. Dowd, where'd you go last night? I said, I just went home, do you know. She says, I didn't tell her I was too shy to go in with all the women, you see. I lost all that, of course, since, you know.
Well, Breed, when you knew Kit, he was working in the mill.
He was in the mill, yeah. Yeah.
And so what was the routine in the day? How early in the morning was he getting up? And
well, you don't shift work, so you went up. You went in for about six o'clock in the morning till two. That would be for a week.
And would you get up and make his breakfast first?
No, he brought his breakfast with him.
Bring your lunch.
I made the lunch at night time. He didn't.
Did you work yourself?
I did. Well, I worked for a while in the mill for a year. And then I worked in town. I worked in a hotel. But I was married at 21, so I didn't work for years then. Your kid's father was here, like, living, so I looked after the house.
And his dad.
And his dad.
And my two brothers. My two brothers
living here.
So full of men. Yeah.
So they all worked outside.
What was that like, Kit? I mean,
I was boss of the house. Once I looked after the house and the food and the lads, they worked, of course, shift work. And his father spent all his time in the garden. We had an orchard. We had a garden on the far side of the road as well. And trees.
Did you have family yourself, Betty?
We had two. Well, I had five children and all, but we just have two alive. And I have a son and a daughter.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so, but was it difficult in those days having, or did it matter really? Because the house wasn't exactly over large. It was this house here now.
It was this house. We had a smaller kitchen. And Grandad, as we called him, I always called him Grandad, always had that room, this room off the living room inside was his bedroom, and we had that side house, which he never put his foot inside. He used to open the door to call Kit when he'd be on the early shift, and that's all. Yeah. He was a very private man, and he was the same with us, like, you know what I mean? He didn't interfere with our life at all. Mm. We just looked after him when he got old. Well, he died when he was 80, but he went senile, like, you know.
I know,
in the mid-70s.
Was he, you know, when you think of all the hardship and the difficult work and all manual work, which you yourself, Kit, but was he, did that take an effect on him in later years, or did it
show? No, really, he was a good provider. I'll have to say that about him, and he's a great man to work. And maybe working hard when he was young might have had an effect on his toll, like when he got old, I suppose. But other than that, like, he was
very healthy until he went senile. You know, we had him for about 7 years senile here.
We looked after him
all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, you spoke to me about all the military side of the family. All the uncles and cousins and brothers involved in the fighting in the First World War. Yeah. Was there any of the family involved in the troubles here at home?
Never. No, none of them. Like, two of my father's brothers were in the Garda. They were in the Garda band, you know, when the Garda was formed first.
Yeah.
The three of them applied, and what happened was, my father stayed the night in with relations in Inchicore, and of course went drinking. And when he went in the next morning, he was late. The doors were shut to be sworn in, so he didn't get in. Being late was a cardinal sin, you know, with the guards. So he just stuck to the work, labouring. The other two got in, these two brothers. Two of them were musicians, you know, they were in the Garda band.
But no involvement at all with the volunteers during the troubles? No
connection at all. Yeah. You know.
Was there any reason for that, do you know?
I'd say he was just a careful man, and he had a family, and he just worked.
Too busy trying to earn. That's it.
You know? Yeah.
Worked very hard. Now, Kit has an older sister alive. You know, she's 92. And she would tell us about, you know, the way he worked. And things he done.
And a quiet man, because he obviously didn't talk about the
no, he didn't, never talk. We never
memories
asked
of his grandfather.
No, he never asked. You see, he'd probably tell us if we asked him. But it never struck me that someday I might like to know all those things. Just like some of my friends were talking to about things like that. They're all the same. Like, we are all the same. We didn't think that when we get older we might like to know about our family tree. Or we might want to know about some of it, you know. But, like, my father was very, very private and all. You know, he wouldn't let his right hand know what his left hand was doing, you know. Because my mother would say, when the other two would come out years ago, if there was any discussion going on, they'd be down around the laurel hedge in the garden discussing whatever they were discussing. But nobody would ever know what they were talking about. Nobody.
But there were people were like that
long ago. Yeah, they were like that.
I wonder, was that all something that was kind of within you? Because everything had to be always kept so quiet from the landlord or from the police during the troubles and that.
Now, my father always dreaded any of us getting into any sort of mischief because of his two brothers being guards. He was very strict about you, like, getting into trouble outside or anything. Now, he never had any bother with me because I was the youngest and all. But, like, the lads and all, they had to toe the line. He was the boss in the house, always. And he wasn't a bully now or anything. But, like, even when they were young and things go wrong in the garden, his favourite strawberry that he was watching for weeks and had it hid from the birds and that disappeared. And I think a couple of them got walloped over it, you know. He was a very keen gardener. Like, there was nothing he didn't know about gardening, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, that was a bed of strawberries there in the 50s. And then after that, we had a big section over there in strawberries and all. When he'd be coming across the bucket of strawberries, he'd have a rhubarb leaf or something over it. And he'd say, like, kids going up and down, what they don't see won't worry them, to be in to rob them, you know. He was real suspicious like that, you know. But like with all that was all orchard, and the far side of the road was orchard too, and he'd stay, he'd be up all night watching it. And he'd sit over in the garden there. He worked in the mill, and he had a lot of young fellas during the war working under him. They were tearing the hard covers off books and that for waste paper, and had a lot of young lads employed. And he'd know when there was a dance on, a late dance, and lads would be coming by here going home. But he'd be in that garden until they were all gone by, so as they wouldn't get in and raid the apple trees or that. Scallions and everything would go, you know.
You know, there's something I'd like you to tell me before I go. The staff that worked in the mill below, and going back, even before your time, oh, now, could you name some of the families
and
the people?
We know all the, well, you remember me telling you about his Uncle Har next door, who couldn't say Peter. Well, that's his Uncle Harry there, that lived next door. That's my father's Uncle Harry. Yeah. And that's my mother's sister. And that's my mother there.
And your mother worked in the mill, so
yeah, too. Yeah, and she was married then. You see, they can see the ring on her.
And did
there.
They keep married women in
there? Yeah, because they were at the rags. They were called the rag pickers, and that was meant to a derogatory thing, the Saggart rag pickers, you know. And they used to cut up the rags, be a knife set up on a bench, you know, and they cut the rags into smaller bits and that. But that's what they, and that was best. Like, we used to dance in her house at parties now, Mrs. Williams.
Was it an open house?
No, over in, no, her daughters and that, you know, and they'd have an old party, and we'd be all young, you know. And we used to have great sport. That's a MacDermott as well. That's a MacDermott.
Where were the
These are all relations. They're all cousins, all from around the area here, you know.
Cousins of your father, weren't they?
Yeah, they'd be cousins, yeah.
So yeah, all the people here were interrelated through marriage.
Yeah, all related. And these are all, we know them all. We know all these women, but they're all dead and gone now. That was her, she was married to a Fitzgerald up in the village there.
Yeah, that was your aunt, Mary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so It's interesting, though, isn't it, to build up a picture of the families that did here and who they were and who they married. And they didn't travel out. They all kind of...
That's pushed. Right, yeah. Because, I have a nephew now, my niece's son, and we have a wedding photograph there, and if you put the two of them near one another, the image of one another, and he's tall as well, he wouldn't come in the door there, the nephew, big tall, and he's like him, and he has the same humour as well, none. Yeah, won't smoke, won't drink. My father didn't smoke, but he drank, all right, but he didn't smoke. He said it was the only vice he missed, was smoking. So he used to always say that. But that was the Uncle Har that couldn't pronounce Peter when my father came home from England a child. That's to say how he got his name. But these are all related. We're all related, you know.
And you know, the very formal dress that they were wearing at work. Yeah. You were saying earlier on there wasn't really a uniform for work. People looking at this picture of the way people did work in the mill, they dress smartly, didn't they?
Yeah, they dressed the best they could at the time, do you know? What they could.
Admired all the hair. They all had lovely hair, look. Heads of hair, big hair. See this, the style, like, you know, that they all had.
It was, all tied up in
My aunt Kate there, when I was a child, she used to come in here every evening for a cup of tea, waiting for the bus. Right? She lived in Clondalkin. And the bus used to pull up over there and wait for her.
Well, they're different times.
Different times, right.
Well, it was lovely meeting you, Betty, here today, and Kit Brady. Thank you too very much indeed. And I will come back because I know that we'll continue with this conversation again. Indeed. Yeah.